call a scenario within within Lorentz violating gravity. And I will just take this in particular with a particular example, which is Hoshawa Lipschitz gravity, but which results can be extended to other frameworks. So essentially, the outline of my talk, I'm going to basically divide in three parts. First, I'm going to explain a little bit about Lorentz violating gravity and focusing on Hoshawa Lipschitz gravity as an example. I will provide or I will detail the Hamiltonian formulation of this theory, which is something essential for the quantum cosmological study. Then, after presenting all the basics of this theory, I will give some example of quantum cosmological models. Basically, the Kantowski-Sachs model studied, which is a simple anisotropic model, and which will help us understand the basic properties of this theory. And finally, I will apply the same machinery to extend these results to a supersymmetric case. So essentially, the idea is not necessarily to tell you something new. The idea is just to show you how this, how the standard machinery of quantum cosmology can be applied to this other context. And probably these tools can be applied to more general theories. So I will begin with some motivation. So the idea of Lorentz violating gravity has been explored in several contexts. And the idea is that this provides a framework in which the ultraviolet behavior of the gravitational sector of a theory can be improved. And actually, a power counting renormalizable theory can be constructed. And an example of this is the Hoshawa-Lipschitz gravity. So the idea is that the propagator of the graviton, and the behavior of this propagator is enhanced into the high energy limit. And it is expected that the theory can become renormalizable, solving some of the basic problems of gravity, which are present in general relativity. The other thing is that Lorentz violations allow for moon-like or even dark energy-like phenomenology. And some examples are the moon-like theories proposed by Blanchet and the recent improvements in Hoshawa-Lipschitz gravity proposed by Nayesh Abshordi. And another idea is that basically we have several severe constraints for Lorentz violations, but in the matter sector. But these violations are weaker into the gravity sector. So of course, there is one caveat in here, that is that these strong constraints in the matter sector are expected to percolate into the gravity sector. And so, but yet it is worth studying the Lorentz violating sector into the gravity scenario. And finally, we can study this, and some good examples of this have been the Hoshawa-Lipschitz gravity, which I have already mentioned, and Einstein-Eder theory, which was proposed by Jacobson. So in this case, I will focus on Hoshawa-Lipschitz gravity and analyze what are the advantages, the pros and cons of this framework. And in the end, I will set all this as motivation to further analyze the world post and Hoshawa-Lipschitz gravity, which I have already mentioned, and Einstein-Eder theory, which was proposed by Jacobson. So in this case, I will focus on Hoshawa-Lipschitz gravity and analyze what are the advantages, the pros and cons of this framework. And in the end, I will set all this as motivation to further analyze the world postness of these theories, which is a project and that is work in progress right now. So let me start by describing the basics of the Hoshawa-Lipschitz theory. Essentially, this theory is inspired from condensed matter ideas. And I'm not an expert on that, but basically the main tool to construct this kind of theories is the idea of an isotropic scaling. And it's just to ask that the theory is invariant under that kind of transformations, where you can see that the time plays a preferred role. And there is a C exponent into this scale, which is the dynamical critical exponent C, and which is usually, or should be, C equals 1 in general relativity. But in this case, since we are providing this preferred role for time, it is expected that this, this theory with a preferred foliation would solve some of the problems. So the gauge symmetries of this theory are this restricted set of, oh, this is not working. this restricted set of diffeomorphisms, which are essentially the, a restricted set compared to general relativity, in the sense that you can ask, you are asking that the time only reparametrizes as a function of time and not as a function of the coordinates, and this gives the preferred role of time. This will later encode the kind of theory that you are constructing in Kochava-Lipschitz gravity. So the idea basically is to combine this idea of an isotropic scaling introduced in gravity, and that's Kochava-Lipschitz gravity. And I just summarized the idea in this scheme because there are a huge class of models for this kind of gravity models, and you can actually choose the one that best fits your, something that is according to what you think is the best. So I will show you some of the most general models. So the idea is that you can construct an action which is natural in the ADM decomposition, the 3 plus 1 decomposition of space-time. I'm sorry?
Yeah, given that you lose, you lose some of the space-time decomposition there, you don't have module constants that depend on time? Do you have a global time?
The cosmological
constant.
To depend on time? Well, essentially, in this theory, the only restriction in the framework that I will be working is that you need to ask that it's non-zero, but not varying on time.
But is it consistent? General relativity is not consistent. So that the cosmological constant be a function of space-time. But if you weaken the diffeomorphism invariance, might it become consistent? Let the cosmological constant be a function of world. Anyway, it's a question. I think it's an interesting question. Do you know if it's been investigated?
No, I have, well, this theory has been there for almost 5 years, and I haven't seen any work related to considering the cosmological, a varying cosmological constant.
Thanks.
But it's a very interesting question. I haven't looked into that. The only thing I know is that the theory itself restricts the cosmological constant by construction to be a negative and non-zero in this framework that I'm going to be working. So, well, if you can just, I will show you this is the general formula of the action. So if you look at this, this is essentially a kinetic term which is modified compared to the ADN on general relativity by this coupling constant in red, which is lambda, in which this encodes the breaking of the diffeomorphism. So essentially, in general relativity, this would be 1. So it is expected that the theory recovers this value under the renormalization group flow. And then you have this potential, which must be compatible with these symmetries, and of course, invariant under an isotropic scaling, right? So you can choose as many terms in this potential which, are, which respect this set of symmetries, but we will focus in a particular case. So essentially, to construct the potential, you need to consider a couple of conditions. One of them is a projectability condition, which is essentially is convenient. If you look that the time reparametrizations are restricted, then it's natural to ask that the lapse function of the theory is only depending on time. So this is called a projectability condition, since this value of the lapse is constant into every hypersurface. But you can generalize this, of course, to have a non-projectable theory, and but this would include several other terms. I will show you in a moment. Also, there is another condition which was originally used by Kochava, which is the detailed balance condition. And you are asking that this potential in the action in here is constructed as the square of this variation of this other action. So let me show you the example, a concrete example. Let's imagine that you use this action in 3 dimensions, and what you're asking is that your potential in 4 dimensions is the square of the equations of motion of this action. So if you vary these equations, you will get, well, just forgetting that this red term would be if you are violating projectability, which includes terms depending on the lapse. But I'm not going to consider that because in homogeneous cosmologies, everything is depending on time, and this kind of terms will not contribute. But anyway, I just put it in here for generality.
What is omega 3?
Where is Sorry? Omega 3 is a 3 turn Simons form.
So it's odd. So it has odd parity?
It has what?
Odd parity. W is.
Yeah, that's correct.
That's interesting.
So essentially, you are asking for a. This is the action of topological massive gravity in 3 dimensions. And essentially, you vary these equations and you get from this term the quantum tensor. And from this term, of course, by varying general relativity, you get the Einstein tensor with the cosmological constant. If you were to vary the other term, you would obtain these other terms. But I, as I mentioned, I'm not including them. And so the quantum tensor will be the variation of this Chern-Simons term, which is essentially this. So in the original theory, this dynamical critical exponent C, which I show you in the anisotropic scaling, is encoded in this term, which is a value C equal 3. So if you vary these equations and you plug them in here, you get the square of this. So that will give you square terms of the quantum tensor, the square terms of the curvature, and some mixed terms which include the curvature and the cosmological constant. And I just coloring in red the ones which would correspond to general relativity, but here you can see that if you make the cosmological constant 0, you disappear the infrared limit. So essentially, this is one of the problems that this kind of theory has, that if you, this doesn't allow you vanishing cosmological constant because then you lose the infrared limit. So essentially, the rest of the terms that you can see here in black are the Lorentz violations included in this theory. So this is a very big action, but this is a very consistent way to construct one, since in case that you wanted to introduce all the terms compatible with the symmetries, this action would contain around 100 terms. So this is the motivation to use the detailed balance action and the projectable version, which is a very restricted example, but is anyway keeps the most of the properties of the theory.
Are the terms of black constructed out of the space-time metric or just the spatial metric?
That's a very good question. Essentially, all these terms are made of the tree metric or the spatial metric. So that's a good point because this would include only second order time derivatives and no ghosts. So instead of including some modified gravity actions which include the square of the 4 quantities, then you would have ghost and ghost problems. So in this case, you only have higher order special derivatives, but no time derivatives additional to the second order ones. So this is one of the claims that the theory has no ghosts and is renormalizable.
Okay.
Something that has not been proved, but yet is. So as I mentioned, this theory has some advantages, but also some disadvantages. This theory includes, besides the two gravitational, the two polarization modes of the graviton, there is an additional scalar mode, which propagates in the theory. I will not discuss this kind of thing, but I just to mention that there are still some problems which are open questions. And if you compare those red terms with the standard Einstein-Hilbert action with lambda equals 1, and then you will get these three expressions for the speed of light, the Newton's constant, and the cosmological constant, depending on the three-dimensional. This is the four-dimensional cosmological constant, and this will be the three-dimensional one. So if you look at these expressions for lambda equals 1, this enforces that this cosmological constant must be negative. So because of that, it is necessary sometimes to take this analytical continuation, which makes is just changing the parameters of your action in three dimensions, mu and w, these coupling constants to extend them, and that if you plug them into this action, this would change the sign of the potential, and that of course will change the sign of the cosmological constant. So in that case, you can construct the theory and still have a positive cosmological constant. But you cannot have a theory which at the same time has a positive and a negative solution for the cosmological constant. So this kind of theory is now admit a Hamiltonian formulation. The composition to this preferred role of time can be encoded into a Hamiltonian formulation, which is natural for the theory, and which is can be actually written in the same form as general relativity, as a Simons constraints. Here being this Hamiltonian constraint and this the momentum constraints, and where basically you can quantize this theory following the Dirac's recipe or the canonical quantization recipe, imposing these constraints on over the state vector. And then you would be left with the Wheeler-DeWitt equation for this theory. So this is what we are going to use into this project. Essentially, is to quantize the system and analyze these Hamiltonian and momentum constraints and to see what we gain in case of introduction Lorentz violations in this theory. So, and of course, you can recover all your classical solutions just by means of a WKB approximation. And for that, you just need to take the answers, yes?
Is this the case where the lattice is a constant space or variance space?
Oh, that's a good question. If you mean if the lapse is only depending on time?
The lapse only depends on time. You just get one Hamiltonian constraint, one Hamiltonian constraint per point.
Yeah, that's correct. In that case, the Hamiltonian constraint is non-local, and then you need to take the integrated Hamiltonian constraint.
But if it's just one, it's integrated. The lapse is a constant.
Yes, yeah, that's correct.
Right, so there's not many finger time.
There is no one?
There's no many finger time. It's just a single Hamiltonian constraint. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, in this case, for that project.
Could you show it again?
Huh?
Could you go back and show it?
So in this case, when you are asking that this lapse is only depending on time, so this constraint, I don't know.
So it's really the integral of H perpendicular, which is the constraint.
Sorry?
The constraint is really the integral over space of H perpendicular.
Exactly. Yes, instead of considering H, you will be taking the integral over the space of this H. You call it H0, and this would be your additional constraint, which is an integral constraint.
Okay.
In the case of that you are working in the projectable case.
That explains why there's an extra scalar field.
Sorry?
That explains why there's an extra scalar field.
Okay,
you dropped a constraint per point.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, if you do the counting in this Hamiltonian framework, then there is an additional degree of freedom compared to GR. Yeah, that's right. Okay. So you can take this WKB approximation and then taking the ansatz on the Hamiltonian constraint, then you would for the wave functional, then you can recover your semi-classical solutions, identifying this as the variation of this functional or this phase into the wave function. And then you can construct from the Wheeler-DeWitt equations this set of Hamilton-Jacobi equations, which essentially represent the classical theory, but in the Hamilton-Jacobi formulation, right? So essentially what I have told you is that you can go to the quantum world and then just recover your classical solutions by means of this WKB approximation. And that's what I am gonna be doing all the time, right? So let me show you this with a very concrete example, which is the Kantosky-Sachs model. And I will do it for general relativity just to learn how this is usually done. So essentially, we are gonna take as an example the Kantosky-Sachs universe, which is described by this metric. And this is a very important metric in general relativity because this describes the analog of the Schwarzschild de Sitter or anti de Sitter black hole if you just rename the coordinates t with r. So you can recover your solutions by making this kind of transformation. So essentially, there is a mapping between this metric and the Schwarzschild-de-Sitter metric. And that's why this model has been extensively studied in general relativity. So the first one to analyze this model into the quantum mechanics, quantum cosmological setting was Messner, who proposed this nice parametrization for this metric. And you can see from comparing these two expressions that there is a Messner map, in which essentially the lapse is the inverse of this function, and this t squared is equivalent to this. So essentially, you can see that if you determine omega, you can calculate omega, and with this you can obtain the lapse. And that's what I'm gonna be doing in some point. So if you calculate the Wheeler-DeWitt equation corresponding to this metric with this parametrization, you would lead to this kind of Klein-Gordon equation, in which essentially the omega variable plays an intrinsic time role, and this is the potential for this theory. So this is nothing new, just Wiesner solved this problem. And the solution for this Wheeler-DeWitt equation is written in terms of plane weights for the beta variable and a modified Bessel function for the dependence of the omega variable. So the properties of these kind of solutions have been studied very well, and I will show you a little bit of that in a couple of slides. So then, if you apply the WKV as I show you to this Wheeler-DeWitt equation, you will get this Hamilton-Jacobi equation, right? Where you then need to identify these functionals as I showed with the momenta associated with the canonical variables. And then after that identification, you would be led to this classical equation, which is an equation for omega, beta, and the lapse. So it's just one equation for these three variables. But if you remember that we have the Wiesner map, which relates beta, omega, and n, you at the end have only one equation for one variable. And if you solve this equation, you are led to this classical solution, which actually reproduces the Kantosky-Sachs metric, as you can see here. And so as expected, as I described it before, the WKV method applied to the Wheeler-DeWitt equation gives the same solution as the Einstein field equations. So essentially, what I've done is just go to the quantum world and then extract the classical solution from a WKV equation. So this can be very useful in other contexts, as I will show, in which you can introduce something at the point of, at the Hamiltonian formulation and not at the level of the action. So let's do the same for Hoshava-Lipschitz gravity. In that case, the Hamiltonian constraint is this big thing. And essentially, you can recognize that if you compare, just let me show again. There is, in the Wheeler-DeWitt equation of general relativity, this is the canonical momenta for omega, for beta, and a potential, which is consistent of two terms. So if you compare to this equation, you have the part in omega, the part in beta. You have this additional term and this other additional term. These are the contributions which are coming from the high energy Lorentz violations terms, right? So essentially, since all this part is already known and has been studied by Wiesner, we will study the contributions from the ultraviolet limit, which is described by this expression. So essentially, we will have this restricted Wheeler-DeWitt equation over our wave functional. And you can see that I have a minus and a plus here, which is just to remind you that I am considering the original action of Hoshava-Lipschitz gravity and the analytical continuation, which switches the sign of the potential. So the solutions for this are all these huge expressions, but just look at the lambda equals one. Remember that lambda is what breaks general covariance. So if you look at the lambda equals one solution, you will have plane waves again in omega, and then a modified Bessel again in barium beta. So this solution resembles completely the one in general relativity, and we can study that. So, but with my supervisor, who has proposed another approach for quantum cosmology, we have studied these solutions in another context, and I forgot to mention that if you look at this, I have promoted this to a non-commutative context. So essentially, I'm gonna study this into the framework of non-commutative quantum cosmology, which was proposed by my supervisor and other colleagues.
Excuse me, before you switch to this, what is the dynamics of the scalar mode and the case in which you break?
If you wish to see some contributions encoded in the metric, you will need to bury this. This is not working. So you will need to switch this value to something different from one, and then you will be studying that case. But in this case, I just restricted that because it's just a neat and simple example. Otherwise, you will need to consider all this full set of solutions. Okay. So let's study this, but in the framework of non-commutative quantum cosmology. And essentially for that, usually you, when you quantize a system, you propose the standard commutation relations. But in this case, we are going to make a deformation of the phase space and introduce a non-commutativity between the variables of that parameterize the metric, in this case, omega and beta, and make it equals I theta, right? And we will leave, we are going to left the momenta in a commutative setting. But this can be generalized to include this the non-commutativity in this other commutation relation. So we can realize this easily in terms of the Moyle product of functions. And for that, we can reproduce or study the same framework in terms of commutative variables, which are related to the non-commutative ones in terms of the cyber-Witten map. So essentially, if you substitute these variables in terms of these commuting ones, you can easily check that these other new variables satisfy the standard and the usual commutation relations. And this would allow us to transform a non-commutative product in terms of the standard product of functions in terms of the commutative variables, right? So essentially, you can use this cyber-Witten map, and the properties of the Moyle product would lead you to this. So essentially, this omega and beta would be given by this. So essentially, in this case, since I am only proposing a non-commutativity between these coordinates, what I am essentially doing is that is going to affect only the potential where this beta is appearing. All right. So
what is the justification for those commutation relations, physical commutation?
Well, essentially, non-commutativity in general was just motivated by some extension, standard model extensions, or to include Lorentz violations. Which is essentially, if you introduce non-commutativity or you study non-commutative geometry, Lorentz violations are implied.
But that is usually phrased in terms of non-commutativity of space-time coordinates. So those are dimensionless parameters parameterizing three metrics, right?
Mm-hmm.
So why should they why should the commutation relations be that, the Heisenberg algebra?
Well, you can actually check that. I am doing all this into the quantum cosmological context, but you can do it in the classical one, and you can see that all this can be done by means of canonical transformations of the variables. And essentially, you are just deforming the phase space of the theory. Motivation comes, essentially, this covers a lot of interest. Of course, these contributions will be very small and are not expected to show up in a standard experiment. So, but it's always interesting. This non-commutativity arose essentially a couple of decades ago into string theory, where there was this B field introduced. So essentially, it's just a generalization, but you can always recover your results by turning off this thing. So,
okay. And there's a similar type of non-commutativity in loop quantum gravity, right? If you look at the fluxes, they satisfy Lie algebra. I mean, it's not exactly this type.
You get this thing in a mini superspace model.
Not necessarily, but in the full theory, if you look at the fluxes for one particular surface, for example, they don't commute with each other. They satisfy Lie algebra. And so, in that case, you would also have geometric variables. Because the fluxes basically give you the metric or the integrated metric.
Right.
So I'm not sure if there's really any relation, but at least formally it's a similar story from a different perspective.
It's same degrees of freedom, so the metric. Okay.
But I guess for Meissner you would still have to agree in that set of Vesitum, but then it's the
set
of
Yeah. Yeah, essentially the idea is just to generalize this quantum cosmological setting, and just, of course, this is just a toy model. But we will see that the effects of this non-commutative decay are not non-trivial. Mm-hmm. So this has been applied to several contexts, but this is just a, of course, quantum cosmology itself in this manner is just a toy model. So this is to continue with that thing. So if you apply, if you rewrite everything in terms of commuting variables, you can introduce, instead of this Moyo product of functions, the standard product for functions. So applying that to our Wheeler-DeWitt equation, we have the kinetic term left invariant under this transformation, but you can see here in the potential that we have introduced this transformation for the in terms of the commuting variables. And so this would allow.
So what? So you did this variable transformation. So now is it the non-commutative product or the normal product?
Ah, yeah, that's right. There's a typo here. There.
So it's a normal product. But, so how do you multiply pi to the wave function?
Sorry?
So I already don't really understand this. The line, the potential is modified. So now you have basically this formula, and you have pi, some function of pi omega multiplies your wave function.
Uh-huh.
And so the wave function does not depend on pi. So you get something which
okay.
doesn't make sense to me. So I don't really understand this trick yet.
Well, essentially, well, I just, this is not working. So, what you mean is that essentially here, this part is not compatible with the wave function.
Yeah, so we have to replace it with a derivative? Or?
Is there what?
Are you interpreting this pi as a derivative with respect to omega?
Yes, I'm just going to interpret this as the standard differential operator.
Okay, so you replace it by derivative.
Yes, yeah, you replace this by the derivative, and then you can solve this equation by separation of variables and sets. Yeah, but then you plug a plane wave in omega, and then this acts on that. And gets
so it acts as a shift operator.
Sorry? Yes, it gets a shift updater. Yeah, that's correct. Yeah. If you introduce that as a partial of omega and then apply this on the wave function, and then you will get a shift on omega. That's the only contribution. I mean, a shift on theta. So that's precisely the result. So these are the huge expressions, but you can see that there is the beta plus theta, this shift on the variable. This nu is just a separation constant. So essentially, you recover the standard solutions by taking this to zero. So it's just a shift into this variable.
Excuse me, one question. What is the sense of taking as a solution of your equation a wave function of omega and beta if now they are non-commuting variables? Shouldn't a representation of that algebra be a wave function on one of the two? Your Hilbert space should be functions of one of omega or beta.
Uh-huh.
Here you're like taking a wave function of both of them, like the wave function of P and Q. So I don't.
No, it's fine if you replace your operators by this.
Yeah, with
so
the Moyle trick, right? But
yeah, so the multiplication, the fields don't work as multiplication operators, but are replaced by this one, by this left tensor.
Yeah, but you should lose at some point the interpretation of that thing as something giving you the amplitude. For having a particular value of omega and beta, right?
Yeah.
That's
so
the thing.
For probability or interpretation, you would always look at expectation values of your operators.
Yeah.
And so it's not just given by the same simple modification.
Okay.
Another naive question. Why are there two sizes of are those two different solutions?
Where
there,
this psi 1 and psi 2, that corresponds to the minus and the plus sign. So this would be the with the minus sign of the potential. Remember that to allow for a non-negative cosmological constant, we need to make an analytical continuation of the theory, and that would change the sign of the potential in the Wheeler-Lewis equation.
Right. Okay.
So these are, yes, I forgot to mention that psi 1 corresponds to the minus sign and the other to the plus sign. So essentially, this minus and plus sign, the only difference between the solutions is that in the first you have a modified Bessel function, a McDonald function, and this is the first one function of the first kind, non-modified Bessel function.
But, I mean, shouldn't you anyway have two independent solutions? And you have a second order differential equation, right? So even...
Yeah, that's
even
right.
When you fix the sign, there should be two independent solutions.
Yeah, that's right. I'm just dropping some of the solution for with physical implications. I mean, this can be generalized to include the other modified Bessel function and the second kind of this one. But those are usually dropped because they are divergent when you go to omega equals zero. So there is a, you can see that, well, that's more complicated here, but.
Actually, can I ask, what did you mean with
UV
limit?
Sorry?
What did you mean with UV limit?
Ultraviolet limit? Okay, yes.
In the cosmology
case? Yeah, just let me go back a little bit. Yes, so you have this full Hamiltonian constraint.
Yeah,
and you are, I'm just keeping this term. Because this is the one coming from the higher order terms in the action. So I cannot solve the full Wheeler-Lewis equation. So I know the solution with keeping only the general relativity contribution, and I'm studying only this higher order contribution. So the ultraviolet limit, I call it, because it comes from the higher energy corrections with the action.
Okay.
And
but you would expect that in cosmology it's other infrared.
Cosmology. The
cosmology is more about infrared than UV.
Well, in this case, as I mentioned, it's just to study a toy model, and since we cannot have the full solution, it's
so important. Something funny happened when you went from a quantum field theory, which the HL model is. The Hajala-Lipschitz model is a is not a model, it's a quantum field theory. You went from that to a symmetric solution of the Einstein equations, Happy-Sachs model. So you made a big jump. So I understand, I think we understand what you mean by saying you want to look at some special terms. But it's no longer the notion of the ultraviolet in the cosmological model you study. Okay. It's the homogeneous model.
Yeah, I mean, probably, yeah, well, I just call it the ultraviolet limit in some sense, but it's, of course, this is the toy model coming from the higher order corrections to the action, but yeah, you're right. This cannot be seen as an ultraviolet limit. Concretely, I'm seriously speaking. And there was another question, but I cannot remember. Yeah, is that correct?
All right. Go ahead.
Okay. So. Essentially, if we want to see what all these things mean, what we can do is to study wave packets. Of course, this it's difficult to see that, or even probably not possible, that these wave functions will be normalizable. So we can give an interpretation in terms of wave packets. And essentially, I'm going to show you how to do that. In this case, I construct wave packets with weighting this wave, the wave function with a Gaussian amplitude. And at the left, I'm just showing you the general relativity case. So in that case, you can see that there is only one preferred state for the universe, which is described by this model. And if you take what I call the ultraviolet limit in Kochava-Lipschitz gravity with lambda equals 1, you will get a similar behavior. But you can see that the roles of the omega and beta variables are switched. So the probability distribution changes, and in this limit. So it is expected that there are some non-trivial effects on the universe in this case when these contributions take place. So we can see that these contributions with other values of lambda, and you can see that there is also only one peak for the universe, so there is only one stable state. But if you introduce non-commutativity, you can see that there is not only one peak. You get several ones, and there is a one preferred state, but there are other peaks of the probability, and those other universes can be reached by tunneling. So in this case, we can see that the contributions coming from Lorentz violations due to the non-commutativity give a very different behavior for the universe if they are taken into account seriously. So, and now the good, what we need to do is essentially we have set the quantum world for this theory, and now we need to go to the classical scenario, and we repeat the same procedure for the WKB model, and using the Misner map, I'm not writing all the details, but the solution for this case in Kochava-Lipschitz gravity is written in this case. So you can see the corresponding metric which arises for this particular model. And you can see in blue that there is an additional term compared to the standard Schwarzschild-Desiderer solution, which goes as 1 over t squared, and which is, of course, expected to contribute for a small t. So this generalizes the Kantosky-Sachs metric of general relativity with this blue term. But in this case, this generalization is still in respecting that this is an asymptotically Desiderer space. So this solution is can be obtained for negative or positive cosmological constant taking one action, the original action, or the analytically continued action. So we can study the properties of this solution because if you remember, by renaming the coordinates, we might switch to a static metric, something that would not. It's not necessarily allowed in Kochava-Lipschitz gravity because first we will need to find that there is this solution also respects the equations of motion. So, but let's keep it into the cosmological context. So, for positive cosmological constant, you can see the behavior. This is just to compare. This is the usual behavior of general relativity. This is the Schwarzschild-Desiderer black hole. So essentially, for positive cosmological constant, if the cosmological constant and the mass of the black hole obey these three conditions, then you are left with three situations. First, and in this case, you can see that there are two horizons, which essentially is a black hole horizon and a cosmological horizon too. If this the parameters fulfill this condition, then both horizons coincide at this value of the mass. And then if they fulfill the third condition, then the space-time is dynamical at all t. So you can see that if we plot the metric coefficients. So you can see that the zeros of the metric coefficients determine where you can find an horizon. So you can see that here you have two horizons. There is a case for only one, and this is fully dynamical space, right? So if we now go to the Schwarzschild anti-Desiderer space in general relativity, of course, the negative mass is a physical solution, but we are left with the zero mass, which is essentially the Desiderer, anti-Desiderer space, and there is no horizon, there is no zero for this metric. And for positive mass, there is only one horizon, which is describes essentially the Schwarzschild anti-Desiderer black hole. So there, it's an horizon, a black hole horizon. So similarly, for Kochava-Lipschitz gravity, we can see that we have the same cases. There is one case in which we have two zeros for this metric coefficient, one zero and one fully dynamical. And in this case, in Kochava-Lipschitz gravity, this term in the metric, usually identified as the mass, there is not such a concept still proof in Kochava-Lipschitz gravity. So we can consider positive, negative, or zero value for this parameter. And in this case, we are obtaining also another solution which has two horizons, one, and one on physical solution in which all the metric coefficient is negative for all t. So essentially, we have this solution which generalizes the Kantosky SAS metric. But this is not necessarily related to a black hole, as it is done in general relativity. So, and the other situation is that if you look at this metric, for example, is negative for all t and except in this value. So this is basically unphysical. So the contributions in Khoshabalipsky's gravity are restricting the metric so far that we cannot have a very nice spacetime. So the properties of this are still under study. But I just wanted to show you a little bit of what can be obtained in Khoshabalipsky's gravity. And finally, just going to show you a final example of how you can introduce some supersymmetric contributions in the context of quantum cosmology. And the idea is, again, this is going to be a toy model. And basically, just to show you what can be done with this machinery. So it was discovered by Graham that the Hamiltonian for the homogeneous models can, in general, be written in this form. So if you take a Hamiltonian for a Bianchi model, you can always write it in this form. Well, this is the metric of the mini superspace. These are the canonical and the conjugate momenta associated with the variables parameterizing your metric and just the potential. So essentially, if you can write the Hamiltonian in that way, then it is possible to find a function which generates the potential. So essentially, in this case, Graham showed that the Bianchi 9 cosmology and other cosmologies in general have a hidden symmetry which encodes supersymmetry for this model only if you can find such a generating potential, phi, superpotential, which generates the potential of your model. So if you can, if you see this expression, I will recall that I want to tell you, if you remember, the detailed balance condition. And this detailed balance condition essentially is the same that Graham has written for this model. So this detailed balance condition seems to be a natural way to generalize cosmological models to a supersymmetric setting. And that can be done if you can find this function phi to reproduce your potential, then you can construct a supersymmetric Hamiltonian, which would be essentially, you can guarantee that your Hamiltonian H0 is the bosonic part, and then there will be a supersymmetric contribution coming from this phi, in which I have introduced these Grassmann variables I'm explaining in a moment. And you can construct a couple of supercharges in terms of them, of the Grassmann variables, just asking that they satisfy this spinor algebra. So essentially, if you can prove that for your model, you can construct the phi and the supercharges with some set of Grassmann variables satisfying this spinor algebra, then you can generalize your model. So let's show this with a very basic example, which is the FRW model, because in other cases, this would lead to very complicated expressions. So in that case, if you plug this metric into the Khoshabalipsky's action, you are led to this Hamiltonian. And particularly, if you look at this Hamiltonian, you can see that this is the kinetic term, and you have this potential term, which I write right here. This Q is just plus or minus 1, depending on the action that you are taking, the original or the analytically continued. So you have this potential, which can be written in this form. So now, what we need to do according to the procedure is to find to see if we can find a value for phi, and then we can make sure that this can be generalized to a supersymmetric case. So if we can solve that equation, and we can, we find that phi has to take this value, and then we can construct the supercharges and then commute them to obtain the Hamiltonian. So essentially, once that we have that phi, we can construct the supercharges, as I mentioned, in terms of this phi a, which are essentially the canonical momenta. which I will again represent as in quantum cosmology, minus the differential operator. And to realize the fermionic variables, I will take this particular representation. This can be done in terms of differential operators too, but I will construct them in terms of matrices based on the Pauli matrices, which are the sigma plus and minus giving us these combinations. So my Grassmann variables will be this one, and I can prove that they satisfy the spinor algebra that I have previously written. So in such case, then I can construct, and I have my standard Hamiltonian, and then I will have an additional contribution. I'm just showing you the result, of course, but this would be the contribution due to the supersymmetry implied in this model. So in this case, we have this bosonic part, and it is expected that the supersymmetry would let an imprint in this term. So this would be the quantum model, and now the idea would be to analyze its properties as I did with the Kantowski-Sachs model. So to solve that Wheeler-DeWitt equation is also complicated, but it's better to understand there's this in terms of the WKB approximation, which I just summarize into this expression, which is the Friedmann equation, which is a modified one. So you can see still here the lambda, which breaks general covariance, which in general relativity will be one drop in this term. And then you will have the cosmological part, the cosmological constant part, the curvature contribution. And this is coming from the higher order terms in the action of Khoshabalichi's gravity, which is one term corresponding to, I mean, we have the curvature, the cosmological constant, a matter term, and something which behaves like radiation. So this blue term would come from the supersymmetry and would be the contribution with a minus or a plus depending on the potential. And then you are generalizing this Friedmann equation with terms which include radiation and matter without the need of introducing a particular stress energy tensor for a fluid. So in this case, Khoshabalichi's gravity gives you all the contributions without the need to introduce matter. So of course, this can be generalized to include a specific kind of matter. But you can see that even with supersymmetry, we can have the vacuum equations generalized. So of course, this Friedmann equation would come from a supergravity formulation for Khoshabalichi's gravity, which we don't know. But we can explore from the Hamiltonian setting what would be the contribution from a supersymmetric case. All right. Okay, so just to summarize what I have presented is just we constructed a Wheeler-DeWitt equation for the Kantowski-Sachs model. And I studied this into the minimal framework of Khoshabalichi's gravity, which is the with projectable condition and with detailed balance condition satisfied. So in that case, we saw that we could introduce the non-commutativity in general. And we could analyze these properties, the properties of this model with the wave packets. And then we saw that the universe, which is described in this case, is completely different to the one which is obtained in general relativity. And so once we studied this quantum model, we focused on to coming back to the classical world, and we found a generalized Kantowski-Sachs metric, which is still an asymptotically anti de Sitter space, whose properties need to be studied. And finally, we can see that this quantum cosmological scenario has allowed us to introduce a supersymmetric extension of this theory. So since the detailed balance is a particular case which matches the conditions to introduce supersymmetry, then we can claim that it's possible to generalize these results for the full action of Khoshabalichi's gravity. However, our results still agreed that this theory is not well-behaved in several cases. But anyway, it's still a good example to analyze the results coming from quantum cosmology. So the idea, and right now something that is work in progress, is to study whether these theories are well posed to study their mathematical consistency. And for that, we are studying the case of Einstein-Eder theory, which matches the Khoshabalichi's gravity case. into the infrared limit for a particular case of Einstein-Eder theory. And those results are still work in progress, which I hope I can present some other time. So thank you for your attention.
So some, maybe not the particular terms that you kept, but there are Korzhava-Lipschitz actions that produce a bouncing cosmology. And so I'm just wondering if you may have looked at that and how that manifests in the Wheeler-DeWitt equation solutions.
Yes, I think there is the projectable but more generic case.
Right.
Though that one, not satisfying the Taylor balance condition, predicts a bounce cosmology, a bouncing cosmology.
Right.
But, in this case, the problem is that we have constructed that model, but to solve the Wheeler-DeWitt equation is even more complicated because it is plagued with several terms. So it can be studied for some limiting cases, but in this case, the general solution has not been studied. Well, I haven't been able to solve the Wheeler-DeWitt equation.
Because of so many terms?
Yeah, well, it's so many terms, and the main reason why these Wheeler-DeWitt equations can be easily solved can be seen probably in the case of general relativity, for example. If you turn off the cosmological constant, you are dropping this term, and you're keeping one potential term which depends only on one variable.
Mm-hmm.
So that makes the Wheeler-DeWitt equation simple to solve because you can take a separation of variable n sets. But that's if you have more and more terms, even though you turn off the cosmological constant, you are left with a very complicated potential. And to solve this equation is, technically very difficult. So what can be done and has been done by, in other contexts by people would be to try a numerical solution, but not an analytical one. But yes, you're right, it would be very interesting to study that other case.
In this KS solution, what is the causal structure of it? Because by switching time for the radio coordinate, how do the solutions of those, how do the roots of those coefficients behave like? How do they behave? Like if you swap T for R, then those are null surfaces and they are event horizons and everything. But there are also coordinate singularities in this, in these coordinates.
Mm-hmm.
What do they look like? How does the causal structure look like? If I were to draw a Penrose diagram of this metric, what would it look like?
Well, the math is simpler. If you consider the vanishing cosmological constant case in that metric.
Uh-huh.
So essentially the idea is that once you are, well, let's suppose that you have the in the interior of the black hole, you would have the Kantosky-Sachs metric, right? And essentially here you will have the outside would be the Schwarzschild one, right? So you can see that these metrics can be obtained if you exchange time and R. You can easily see that from that metric.
Yes, but can I take the Penrose diagram of a Schwarzschild-Sitter metric and flip it 90 degrees and that's what I would get?
Well, essentially, what happens when you approach this horizon, then the light cone flip.
Yeah.
So essentially, a timeline Killing vector becomes a special Killing vector. So,
it is the same as Schwarzschild de Sitter. It's just the interior of the black hole in the upper. It's region number two in the usual Kruskal diagram.
Yeah, but the signature is different. So the coordinates don't have the same signature anymore. So
why do you say the signature is different?
Well, because when you change t for r, then the signature of the t coordinate changes its size.
Yeah, but once you go for r, less than 2m, then the, you are also switching the coefficient, right? Because it, those coefficients will be zero at the horizon and then switch the sign. So there is no modification of the Clausewitz structure.
So there are horizons too?
Yes. Yeah, actually the reason why this can be used is because, well, there has been a study of how to generate a cosmological solution from static solutions. So essentially you can map the Schwarzschild into the Kantowski size without cosmological constant, or Schwarzschild the Sitter into the one with non-vanishing cosmological constant. But you can also map the Reisner-Nostrom solution from the interior to the other side, or many
yeah,
well, solutions.
That, that, yeah, that modification that, that was introduced, the 1 over r squared term, is it like a charged term, right? So
sorry.
It becomes a, yeah, that 1 over r squared term that, that appears in the modification may, looks like a charged term, right? So it's a Reisner-Nostrom de Sitter.
Exactly.
So how would these surfaces look like for an observer?
How do this?
How would these surfaces look like for an outside observer? So if I point my telescope at one of them, what would I see?
I don't fully understand your question because I mean, you're still having.
These surfaces are they are happy surfaces. They have a location in space time, right? So they are. There are events there. So are these accessible? Like, can I actually
look at them? Jump into the black hole, they're accessible. They're just the constant R surfaces inside the horizon. So those are space-like surfaces that are a sphere across a line. And
are they space-like? Because they're null in the, if you switch T4R, they're null. Shouldn't they remain null like that?
I mean, you can just read this as the inside of the black hole, and these just renamed coordinates.
I guess maybe part of the question is what range of the variable t are you considering?
Yeah, of course. The Schwarzschild solution is valid for r greater than 2m, and the Kantowski size is the interior only. So
I can't.
You are not going outside.
Okay.
Yeah. So this coordinate system is incomplete for the, just like it is for Schwarzschild. This is a piece of Schwarzschild. If you try to evolve backwards in time away from the future singularity in this cosmology, you would hit a coordinate singularity, which is the horizon.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's correct. Yeah, it's just a part of the Schwarzschild solution in, which describes the interior of the black hole. Yeah, actually, this map is very useful. I haven't actually worked on, shown you some results on this, but this map allowed to study the black hole into the quantum cosmological setting. So some people claim that this Wheeler-DeWitt equation is a good Wheeler-DeWitt equation for a Schwarzschild black hole, of course with lambda equals zero, because of this map. So you can actually prove that by studying this potential, right here, you can actually expand it and then study this equation into the path integral formulation. So once you obtain this potential, you can modify you can modify the entropy of this black hole. So you would obtain it in the end is the area log modified without logarithmic contribution. So that's very schematic, but in general, it's just that you can construct a partition function based on the potential. So essentially, you take that potential, you expand it, and keep some contributions, and then look for those contributions, how they modify your partition function. And with that, you can construct the entropy, the temperature, and everything for the black hole. And you can see that even though this is coming from the Kantowski size metric, this reproduces the thermodynamical properties of a black hole. So that's another thing that we could use in Khoshabalich's gravity to see how these additional contributions modify, in case they do, the area law. So what I have done that, but didn't have time to talk about that. But essentially, you reproduce the results which have already been obtained in Khoshabalich's gravity with another machinery. So this map can be used in very several functions.
Okay.
So what's the status of, I haven't followed this in detail, but at least if you talk to a lot of people, it says earlier, so a bunch of the classes of these things were either considered to have pathologies or were obviously incompatible with what we see. What's the status of surviving sectors of Hrabe Lipschitz, which are not silly or ruled out, obviously?
I mean, what is the
so at least my impression, correct me if I'm wrong, was that at least a number of these sectors of the thing, and you know, depending on whether you had projectability, detailed balance, I think there was one more condition, which I'm not remembering at the moment, whether these were true or not, that a bunch of these different subclasses were either pathological or obviously inconsistent with what we see. What's the, so are there sectors which are not neither of those things at this point, in the sub which are?
Yeah, well, there are, well, Hrabe-Lipschitz gravity started as a general framework, and there are many subclasses of models. So you have the projectable, the non-projectable, the detailed balance. There is even a general covariant extension. So essentially, it has been shown that the projectable versions, in general, experience a strong coupling, and they have serious problems with this scalar mode, which propagates along the whole scale. So you can always rule out these theories just by binary pole source observations or something like that. But there is something that is called the consistent extension of Hrabe-Lipschitz gravity, which essentially has no detailed balance and no projectability, but it's a huge theory because since you have no conditions to limit the potential, then it gives you like 100 contributions by introducing all the terms compatible with the symmetries. But that seems to have been proven that that the problems have a hope to be solved. So only in the non-projectable and without detailed balance, that's the best option. So, but some people have shown that even the non-projectable with detailed balance, which is the one that I consider here, still has a sensible dynamics and no problems as it happens with the general extension. But I mean, it's still, I just consider this option because if you want to study quantum cosmology of the full model, you would have a potential with like 96 terms and non-predictions. Yeah, but at this point, it seems that if there is hope for this theory, only in the non-projectable case would be something, probably, in my opinion.
And you were writing down these, just in the original action, higher derivatives that were just spatial. But shouldn't I worry that surely some boost observer the boost won't be described as it is in DR, but surely there's some, for some observers, he's going to describe some mixing between space and time. And so shouldn't I worry that those terms are going to give me the usual kinds of pathologies?
You mean that all these higher order contributions in the end will...
That there's got to be secret instability hiding in there, which isn't obvious in this language. At least this would be a concern of mine.
I see. Well,
you're violating Lorentz invariance, right?
Yeah, so the Bliss observer will have some different descriptions. I have no idea what it is, but there'll be something. And I think it'd be shocking if there weren't some mixing of space and time.
But the theory itself, you know, strongly breaks isotropy of space-time. There's a preferred foliation.
Yeah.
So, you know, as long as the theory has the right behavior in the preferred frame, that's sufficient. It's a boosted observer, like you say, will see something strange. We'll describe it in a strange way, but it's perfectly sufficient to analyze stability in one frame.
No, it may be sufficient. I'm just suggesting that in that boosted frame, if my suspicions are right, you're going to see an instability, and if that's true, then the other observer would have to see an instability too.
Whether there's an instability or not is not observer dependent. So if
I agree.
So we just analyze it in the preferred frame and we see there's no instability.
Well, I guess I'm not sure it's not clear to me these kinds of instabilities you can't even necessarily see perturbatively. So I don't know if you're saying this has been analyzed at the full non-perturbatable when you're saying there's no instability, then that would be an answer. But I don't know that that's been done.
By non-perturbative, do you mean, what do you mean, in the quantum field theory?
No, no, just classically, beyond perturbation theory. So something like
yeah,
higher orders of beliefs.
Well, that's been complete, what do I mean by that? Instability. Well, if you reach for full nonlinearity, I mean, that's like asking about cosmic censorship or something in general relativity, isn't it? Like, what do you mean by showing no instability?
Maybe it'd be better if I'm a little more concrete. So there's a Nostradamus type instability that you can have, which may or may not be visible perturbatively. Depends on the background and the particular type of terms you add. So I understand the statement to be this has been looked at perturbatively, and there's no ghosts. It's been shown there's no ghosts. But that doesn't necessarily mean there aren't, in this other framework, other way of viewing it, fairly obvious terminal instabilities.
There's a positive energy theorem for spherical solutions of a special kind. Would that satisfy you, a positive energy theorem?
Depending on how general it were, that would certainly satisfy a lot of people.
Yeah, there's no positive energy theorem as general as the one in general relativity for
right.
This theory. So maybe that's the way it phrases. I agree with you that that hasn't been shown.
Just asking a question.
Yeah, I really don't know how to answer.
I think we should postpone any questions for a later discussion and thank our speaker again.